Hello and welcome to Science Unscripted. It's Connor here.
And Gabe.
And we are joined today in studio by two guests, Esther Felden and Lewis Sanders IV. Thank you for coming in today.
Hey, guys.
Hi.
Hey.
We've had you on the show before, or Esther anyway.
Yeah.
As part of DW's investigative research team. And today you're here with a story that you've spent a while on. And if I've understood it correctly, Lewis, it began with a tip or something?
Yeah, that's right. So the person that ends up going on to be the protagonist of our documentary and is kind of the one that kind of jump starts this whole investigation is Gabriel Lando. And about almost a year ago now, I was on duty. I had this tip off phone that we have in order to receive, you know, tips from the general public. And I get this one about someone, you know, from Gabriel wanting to talk about his experiences at a Max Planck Institute. And my background isn't in investigating academia. It's in, you know, looking at war crimes or militant groups in the Middle East, etc. But, you know, I was like, okay, let's see what there is here. Maybe we could pass it on to someone else in the team. And I had a conversation with him. It probably lasted about an hour. And it was at that point where I thought, okay, wait a second. There's something here. You know, he's speaking about the kind of abusive behavior that his superior, his director, is perpetrating. And it felt like it could be a wider issue.
For some context, for the people listening to this who do not know what the Max Planck Society is, it's one of the world's most renowned scientific institutions. Well, it comprises 84 institutes across Germany and internationally. Over 15,000 scientists, 31 Nobel laureates over the years in terms of legitimacy.
There are four pillars of science in Germany. There's the Max Planck, the Leibniz, the Helmholtz, and the Fraunhofer. And if you had to choose which one is highest on that mountain, it's the Max Planck Institute. We'll stop.
Maybe even worldwide. And what you're saying here is that one of the scientists reached out to you to talk about...
So he reached out to speak about the kind of behavior his director was perpetrating in a professional environment. And the things that he was describing were things that would not be acceptable here, let alone anywhere. And so throughout the conversation, I started to understand that the issue wasn't that this is just, you know, one bad apple who, you know, is yelling at, you know, junior scientists and whatnot, but that this is, that there are other cases where this abuse is happening within this particular institute under this director.
Before you go on, Lewis, let me just play a clip of what Gabriel himself said to you guys.
Yeah.
You have done, can I say the words that he said? You have done shit. You are not working at all. Like you don't, you're fucking useless. And he was hitting his table while he was doing that. And yelling at me at the point that I could see him like spitting. He would absolutely crush me.
Yeah, I'm not sure I even know, legally speaking, what to call that, but I think most people have an immediate gut reaction out there. Anyone who's worked, anyone who's a human being, that's pretty awful behavior to receive from your boss. And of course, this is one example or one claim. But then your job as a team is to verify that the systemic part of it is truly systemic. I guess my question is, how do you figure out that it's not just this one boss and this one guy telling you a story?
So Gabriel said during that kind of initial conversation and would go on in other interviews, say he felt like even the treatment that he had as a postdoc was actually probably not even the worst of it.
Yeah, we ended up talking to more than 20 people from this particular institute, and it was hard work to get their trust, to get them to actually talk to us, because you have to know that there's a lot of fear among these people. Those are young scientists at the start of their career. They are dreaming about being this big scientist one day, and then their career is kind of, you know, put on hold by someone who just abuses you psychologically, who abuses their power. And those directors, you have to say that they are very, very powerful. They reign like almost like gods. That's what we've been told. So it took a very long time to get the trust of those people. Most of them wanted to stay anonymous too, because they were afraid of repercussions, because those directors are very well connected throughout the world. So they can stop your career before it even started.
Kind of a weird question, but you reached out probably digitally, right? You weren't sitting in the parking lot with binoculars waiting for them to walk out of a building, or how'd you?
No, we spoke digitally. Some of them, of course, we later met in person. But most of them, yes, it was digitally.
There was actually kind of a couple different phases of like how that happened. The initial one was kind of just going through, speaking to other people, trying to corroborate the kind of things that Gabriel was describing. And that happened in kind of like one particular period of time while he was there and some of the others that were there also. But then, you know, we eventually expanded that like across time to speak to people who are more so recently there and also before even Gabriel Lando had gone there. So part of this process was also establishing that there's a pattern of behavior here from people who at times knew each other, but also people who didn't know each other, right?
What exactly is the pattern?
So with this director, there's kind of a couple of elements that kind of came up throughout the testimonies multiple times. And one was this kind of aggressive behavior that wasn't based on, you know, scientific, you know, debating science or whatnot. It was actually attacks on personality, attacks on the person, name calling. Also, another aspect of that was just, you know, saying one thing and then later, I don't know, I guess changing their mind, expectations do change and whatnot. But, you know, people would come in and they would show their results and they would be just immediately have them denigrated by this guy. And at least this is what, you know, people are describing to us. But then the other aspect of this that really kind of taps into the whole like abusing one's power is the fact that he's not only your scientific advisor, but he's also your employer. So he would also, a few of them were talking to us about how they would, you know, he would allow things to go almost to the end of your contract and then basically use a contract extension as a way to apply pressure on you to actually, I don't know, do whatever he wanted you to do. You know, I need you to bring me these results, not these.
And to add to that, most of the people that had problems extending their contracts were from countries outside of the EU. So residence permits were directly connected to their contract at MPI, at the Max Planck Society. So that put those people under a lot of pressure because they were fearing to be out of a job, out of a residence permit, out of an existence, basically.
And one thing that I only half understand this at this point, but I think that is interesting here is that most of us have had a bad boss or possibly even a toxic aggressive boss at some point in their lives. And in this particular case, there is something I believe that is unique about the Max Planck Institute or Max Planck Society that makes it different than other places. Have I understood that correctly? The role of the director, something along those lines?
Yeah, kind of. So the Max Planck Society has established a certain principle, which is called the Harnack Principle, that dates back to 1911, actually, so more than 100 years. And this is basically, you pick like one or two single gifted researcher, like very famous world renowned scientist, and they get to build their institute around them. And so this is why, like I said, they are referred to as godlike, because that's about how much power they actually have. And so the power imbalance is really, really big between those at the beginning of their career and those on top of the institution.
So you're saying that the guiding idea on which the Max Planck Institute or Society was built, that you give one leading researcher the freedom to do what he or she wants, to employ whomever he or she wants, has now, what, over time become a negative thing? Because it's led to abuse, or it's enabled abuse, or it's made abuse.
I think
that there's an unaccountability or that or no supervision of it, or what exactly is, what's going on?
I think so. I think that's what our investigation has shown. And it's not to say that it's not still a good idea. I mean, I think there's a lot of people that would argue for that. But I think the issue is when you do have that much power as a director and everyone knows who you are. I mean, we've spoken to people who tried to report, you know, abusive behavior or misconduct by a director. And when they go to HR, they go to someone, they're like, look, you know, I would like to kind of let you know that this is happening. They're like, yeah, yeah, okay, yeah, we're happy to hear it. You know, who's involved? Oh, the director. Oh, no, actually, we can't really do anything about that. It appears as if the accountability structures are effectively failing, especially junior scientists, PhDs, postdocs.
And maybe to add to that, this was a collaboration with a German news magazine, Der Spiegel. And our colleague there, she had been working on this topic for years. And so she had exposed some single incidents at several institutes. So the Max Planck Society has been aware of the problem for years. And they have conducted a survey throughout all the institutes. And the result was that 1 in 5 had experienced bullying in their respective institutes. So they are aware that the problem is there. But to this day, there has been no change whatsoever.
1 in 5, that means that 2 or 3 or 4 thousand scientists have experienced bullying at a Max Planck Institute.
What has to change to make this better at the Max Planck Society?
So there are a lot of different solutions that are kind of spoken about behind the scenes. But one of the experts that we spoke to was a former lawmaker in Germany's parliament. And he's also done a lot in trying to bring, you know, further information out within the Max Planck Society of what's happening there. And one of them, you know, he talks about the professionalization of human resources, but he also speaks about having, you know, independent supervisory bodies that will not only hold, you know, the kind of governing structures to account, but also that can hold account the ones that are doing investigations too. And this is kind of a large issue that has been discussed among a lot of the experts that we've spoken to about, you know, there's a lot of conflicts of interest among parties that are being represented. You know, the person, you know, who launches the investigations on the other side is the friend of someone, and the directors are all kind of, let's say, you know, They don't want to harm each other's reputations, right? And no one really wants to harm Max Planck Society's reputation, which I could fairly understand. But yeah, there's this quote. So last year, there was this report by Germany's Federal Court of Audit that basically said there's a huge problem at the Max Planck Society. There's a lack of supervisory bodies. And, you know, the funny quote is, the president supervises his own actions because of the way it's structured.
To add to that, one of the experts we talked to also said he's a psychologist, and he said that his biggest hope at this point is actually the media, because he says this is like the only thing that can build up public pressure to at some point maybe initiate some changes. At this point, we're not there, but basically that's what he said. And actually, what we have been seeing ever since the documentary was published on DW's YouTube channel is that we have like 2,000 comments underneath it, most of which are from people who say, wow, this exactly is what happened to me. It's not only Max Planck, it's other German institutes, and also it's institutes from outside. I mean, a lot of people are commenting on Max Planck Society, but also like academia in itself. And this is like 2,000 small testimonies that we didn't even ask for. And we wouldn't have been able to talk to those people because most of them would have been afraid. Some even say that in the comments, that they would never have dared to speak out. But only now, because they saw that some courageous person like Gabriel Lando made the effort and took the courage and, you know, spoke, that they even dared saying, yes, I know what he's talking about because it happened to me too.
So what is the takeaway that scientists around the world right now who are considering Germany as an avenue of their research, that they should be aware that there is a problem? At the entire Max Planck society, or just in what should people listening to this right now take from your guys' investigation?
I think the best person to kind of answer that would be, you know, the scientists that we spoke to, and we asked a lot of them, okay, what, you know, if you could give one piece of advice to a PhD or postdoc right now, what would it be? And their answer is always, look, it's probably not, you know, it's not every director, it's not every group leader that's going to be put you in, you know, abusive situations and whatnot. But there are many out there, and you have to just be aware of that. And so one of the things that you could do is reach out to people who have worked under this director, under this scientist, under this group leader, under this PI, and ask them, you know, what was it like working with them? And the more people you ask, the better you can get a kind of like picture of who this person is. And I would say that that's the kind of main resounding piece of advice we hear from a lot of the people that we've spoken to.
It's great advice, right? If you're thinking about uprooting your life and moving to pursue an area of research, that's a really, compared to all the rest of it, that's a very small step. Looking out of, I don't know, via these job social media job platforms and finding people who either work there now or have worked in the past to, yeah, take a couple of minutes and check in and be like, hey, are they as a nice person to work for? Is it pleasant? Are you allowed to tell me that? Could help a lot of people out there.
Yeah.
Esther? Lewis, thank you for giving us some insight into the Max Planck Institute. I'll just add here, I felt a duty for us to invite you in because we talk about the Max Planck Society and to them, also to directors sometimes, a lot. They do great work. We're not throwing the whole thing under the bus here, but I think they would be the first to say that you should look at something objectively as it actually is and try to improve it.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having us. Yeah.
Scripted.
Many thanks there to Esther Felden, Lewis Sanders IV for sharing what they learned from their investigation into abuse at the Max Planck Society, in particular one institution. We did not mention the perspective of the Max Planck Society or that institute in the report. They did reach out to Esther and Lewis and said that they declined, essentially, to comment on anonymous allegations or the specifics of any individual case, but that they're taking it seriously, but will not, they won't comment, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we will keep you posted on that story. We're now going to majorly switch gears and move into a celebratory attitude. Yeah. It has been 5 years since we launched this show. That is what we are celebrating today, the 5-year anniversary of Science Unscripted.
At the end of March 2020.
Yeah, it was March 30th, 2020, 5 years ago, that we renamed this show It had previously been kind of a traditional radio show with reports coming in from around the world and
from correspondents.
From correspondents, yeah. And we
it was too boring.
Traditional.
Traditional. It's not something that I could listen or I would want to listen to. So we tried to change it and make it into a show that we would want to listen to. And also, obviously, be able to convey all these the information flying out of, you know, everywhere because of COVID back then.
Yeah. And we decided that we were just going to very quickly go through some of the highlights of the last 5 years, highlights, lowlights, whatever you want to call them, because and keyword there is quickly. Because this is not, I don't know, it's very easy to say, oh, you know, come listen to us celebrate ourselves for 30 minutes. We're not going to do that. We're going to do it for about 9 or 10 minutes here, tops. That's all we have time for. And I'm going to start with the very first email we got as a result of our newly rebranded show, Science Unscripted.
Okay.
And this is from Niranjan, who said she loved our show. She's from India. And she says, at that point, her question was, does commuting by bike increase or decrease the chances of a corona infection? Which we kind of like
by bike
laugh at, or that seems I think everyone knows the answer to that question now, but that's where we were back then. It was completely novel. It was called the novel coronavirus. It was a novel coronavirus. We had so many questions that we didn't have answers to. They seemed so obvious in retrospect, but
I remember walking down the street and wondering whether the virus was in the air floating around and could infect me. As I was walking down the street,
we had an email.
That's where I was at.
Email from somebody asking whether they should sleep with their mask on.
Yeah.
Which now, again, we all know the answer is usually is no. If somebody isn't in the room with you and they are infected, that mask is not going to work for 8 hours and not have you get infected.
I remember telling my dad when he came back from Piggly Wiggly, the supermarket in town in Beaver Dam, Wisconsin, after he got his groceries, to put them in the garage and douse them in disinfectant. With gloves on. Like, that's how scared I was back then and how scared people were writing into us.
You can have, it wasn't a bad idea back then, better safe than sorry. You can have these so-called smear infections. It can last for 72 hours.
Yeah, but that was not the principal route of infection, avenue of infection.
Absolutely
we didn't
not.
Know that at that point.
We did not. Moving on, another short clip for you. I liked this segment when we did it. The females lay 12 eggs, which surprised me based on their size. And they do have kind of a funny name if you're into some, you know, humor that's below the table, so to speak.
Is it okay that I don't know this bird?
Like you don't recognize the song at all? You've never heard that song?
I'm not sure I've heard that sound.
Okay.
Ever in my life.
Well, that
15,000
is...
15,000 recordings on Zeno Canto and I haven't heard it once?
Yeah. That was our bird quiz.
Oh, yeah.
Our bird quiz. Specifically from 2021. We've done that a couple times. The winner of that one was one of our longtime, not just listeners, but somebody who writes in a lot, Brent North. He identified all the birds. That one was the Paris Major. You can look up the bird's real name. That was the under the table reference.
Yeah.
Or not. It's a great tit. It's a bird that we see all the time out here out the window in Germany.
Sure. Brent, thanks to Brent. I also have a bunch of names here. I want to extend thanks to people who have written into us. Some of our loyal listeners. David, Philip, Gus the Paperboy, Mark, Ramey, Karen, Cheryl, Beatrice, Jim, Warren, Paula, Philip, Srinivas, Anthony, Adam, Arnie, David, Chris, Avis, Nancy, James, Ernesto, Roger, Jay, Cameron, Fred, Henrik, many, 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 many more. You guys have given my life a sense of purpose. I don't know if that's an important thing in the course of events in our world and the universe, but you have really made my life meaningful over the past 5 years.
And what an
I say that absolutely genuinely.
An overwhelming feeling it is to go back through these emails. It's, I mean, 5 years is a lot of time, but it's not that much time. And to see that, you know, when the scrolling icon gets smaller and smaller and smaller because there's so much to scroll through that you can't even hardly do it. Mm. Thank you for all of these emails. We don't have time to reference very many at all on the show, but they mean a lot to us. I'm going to jump over some audio that I had clipped out, but we just don't have time for, and it was really just self-serving.
I don't have any audio because I thought I was supposed to include clips that only about COVID, and the only one that I cut out was my when I got COVID.
Oh.
Nobody wants to listen to that right now.
No, we want to collectively forget that happened and move on.
What's your next thing?
Well, the one I was going to play, it's when I did the parabolic flight.
Oh!
that was a special moment for me, a big to experience zero gravity or 1/6 gravity.
Let's hear it real quick, and then you tell us what it felt like again.
Science Unscripted.
Okay, so we are at, I don't know, two gravities going up. I am pressed to the floor, and now it's going away. Now I am floating. Holy cow. Holy. Okay. I have no control here. I'm not sure it was a good idea to hold this microphone and use one hand. Okay. Whee! And I'm crash-landed back on the ground. Holy crap.
I get nauseous listening to that audio. That's not an exaggeration. I have an association with vomiting because of how much I vomited on that parabolic flight.
How many times?
It kept coming and coming and coming in waves. I think there were 20 or 21 up and downs, and that sound, that is when it was diving off, and that's when the zero G started. That sound makes me feel sick.
Are we talking really roller coasters, or what did it feel like?
I cannot compare it to anything, because when else do you experience zero G's? Just the... Yeah, this slow drop off, and suddenly you're up in the air. And at first, the first couple times, maybe half dozen, felt wonderful. And then I started feeling nauseous. And then I knew I was stuck in there for another 15 rounds of it. And I went and sat down after about 10 rounds. And the staff, the European Space Agency people on board, they knew what was happening to me, and they helped me out. But yeah, that was an experience for sure.
Speaking of nausea, not nausea, but let's go to the bathroom. Let's go to a DW bathroom, because at one point over the past 5 years, I forget when it was, I think about 2 years ago, the pipes in the bathroom by the science department where we work were making a really weird noise, and we addressed it on the show.
Yeah, this is a physics problem that I would like to extend to all of our listeners all around the world. If you have experience in plumbing, can you explain why in the bathroom that Gabe and I use at DW, when we flush either the urinal or the toilet, out of the faucet comes this sound?
What do you guys have to say at this point? Where should we keep going with this show? Hopefully we get another 5 years, maybe if it's another 5 months or 5 weeks, it will have been worth it.
Yeah, you never know.
It will have been worth it.
You never know.
The media landscape is, the topology changes fast.
Yes.
Around here, but where should we go with it?
What do you have in mind for us for the next 5 years? Where could we go that we haven't yet? That's a really good question to ask at the end here. Last thing, Gabe, I think we're going to end this show today, this episode today, with a song.
Oh, we're going to go back to the pipes.
Was it? No, it wasn't the pipes, was it? Well, I guess, no, kind of.
It was in the same key of the pipes.
One of our listeners, Philip, wrote a poem to us, and we put that poem to song. I think that's the best thing we did musically on this program in the last 5 years. And so enjoy that. Thanks for being with us for 5 years. Thanks for all the emails, ideas, questions, everything you've done. Here's to 5 more. Sit unzipped on an outhouse throne in a forest full of wild flowers. Listen early morning bird song and the distant radio traffic from Science Unscripted. Remember my children playing in the unknown salt marsh many years ago. Grateful that the toilet and the faucet make no strange sounds.
No, 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 no more strange sounds.
DW, made for minds.